No more information blocking, right? No more exorbitant fees to get access to data. You know, these kinds of things are being teed up. And if you're not reading those tea leaves, you're probably going to not do well.
From InterSystems, it's the Healthy Data Podcast. I'm Jordan Cooper. To learn more about this and other episodes, please visit podcast.healthydata.com.
We're here today with Rick Moore, founder and CEO of MTC Group, former CIO of the National Committee for Quality Assurance, and a retired Air Force major. Rick, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Jordan. Appreciate it.
Yeah, so you've done a lot of work in a lot of different spaces. I'm interested in kicking off our conversation regarding NCQA and HEDIS measures in particular. Many of our listeners are CIOs of large healthcare delivery systems, and they participate in programs like Medicare, Medicaid, promoting interoperability program. They deal with reporting of electronic health record derived electronic clinical quality measures like HEDIS measures. And they also participate in CMS star ratings program. I'm wondering if you could tell me more about what sort of topics are top of mind? What should people consider they may not otherwise consider? Maybe what would constitute a better measure, or what do they need to do to make sure that they improve their ratings and increase revenues to their organization?
That's a lot. That's a lot. Yeah, it's a big question. So let me try to unpack some of that. So the big shift in the ecosystem, as everyone knows, that's driving a lot of this push for value is measurement, right? That's one of the, if you will, carrier sticks to try to get folks to move that way, right? Getting out of the fee-for-service mindset and really doing a whole person, whole patient, quality population level metrics, right? So HEDIS is embedded in that ecosystem. It has been for well over 25, 30 years now. So that shift created, the good news is there was already an ecosystem ready. HEDIS was it. And I think the last decade or so has shown that they weren't necessarily digitally ready, right? We weren't ready to move at the speed of the data that was being coming at you, if you will. So now clinical data is so much more accessible in many ways than it was, let's say, when HEDIS started back in 1990-ish, right, mid-90s. And with today's ecosystem that's evolving, and it's evolving faster than ever, with FHIR coming out, the Fast Healthcare Interoperability Standards, there is a huge opportunity for NCQA's measurement ecosystem to go digital. And I believe, prior to my departure there in 2021, we had worked diligently on those standards, on those metrics to improve upon the use and leveraging the clinical data ecosystem that has started to emerge, right? When our high tech came out and we were all incentivized to start putting electronic health records in place. Unfortunately, the interoperability portion of that wasn't, I'd say the focus of that first phase is what I think a lot of folks at ONC or CMS would call that. Now we're in phase two, maybe some would call phase three of the meaningful use program. Now it's MIPS, right? And there are signs ahead that say clinical data is now going to become the norm. So if you're a CIO out there and you haven't been figuring out strategies to, one, acquire the data, two, assess the quality of that data, because as we all know, when we get data, when we first start shining a light on data, we start finding what? Data quality issues. So getting that data quality to a level that's usable for what I would call the secondary purpose of healthcare data, right? The primary purpose is what? Care. The secondary purpose is these things we're talking about here, measurement. I think clinicians and others would probably say we've been flipping that for some time, and it seems like the primary purpose has been for measurement. But as we know, this interoperability infrastructure that we put in place, it's really for better care. So I'm excited about the future in the sense that NCQA saw the opportunity, and we've been working on it while I was there. We were working on that strategy for some time. They've also been working on a version of the measures earlier on. You probably have heard called the Electronic Clinical Data Systems, ECDS. And now we're morphed that into with the FHIR CQL standards, right? Clinical quality language. There's now a way to format those clinically rich data into digital quality measures. So DQMs are now going to become more the norm. When I say more than norm, if you look at the HEDIS ecosystem of measures, there's about 100 or so. And in that, there's probably a good 20 or so that are what I say clinically dependent. Those measures would get, I would call it the first lift, if you will, from the DQM process, meaning it's going to shift those measures into that to that arena where clinical data is going to become more of the primary source than the secondary source. Right now, it's really a secondary source, right? Because plans focus on the administrative data, claims and whatnot, to get their rates. Then they have an opportunity to go do what we call supplemental data, right? To enrich those rates with sampling of records and whatnot. All of that creates burden, right, on the ecosystem to go get those charts. And it costs a lot of time and money, and it certainly creates pain points for the ecosystem. So now that this digital ecosystem has evolved, there's now an opportunity here for the infrastructure of how a measure is defined, how the data is pulled in, to become a whole lot more what we've all been wanting is that, you know, S7 key on your computer to actually get a measure out of the system right away. So that reality, while it's not going to be 2 years, it's probably going to be another five or so before you start seeing, I'd say, a critical mass of FHIR endpoints stood up, where you're going to start seeing clinical data more fluid going through the ecosystem, right? Where there's more and more of the, what I'm calling externality parts outside the EHR, labs, other types of ancillary services are going to get more ubiquitously interoperable. And I believe plans are going to be able to reach down into the ecosystem of clinical data and pull out what they're going to need for measurement in a much more facile way than they can do today. So that's where I'm very excited about the future. So thanks for asking.
Sure. So we've covered a bunch of topics already so far, just on that first question.
Sure.
We ran across clinical data acquisition, interoperability, integration. There's many areas that we can delve into to explore further. I would like to talk for a moment about automation. Of that data extraction and measure reporting. So I'm a CIO of a large healthcare delivery system, and I want to participate in these programs. I mentioned the public payer program, but there are also private payers as well who would like me to report on these measures. How am I going to start making inroads to, instead of having my data quality analyst pull these operational reports and send those results out to the plans manually, how am I going to automate the collection, the dashboards, and then the sending of those measures to plans?
Yeah, that's another good outcome of this ecosystem I was describing earlier, is that the FHIR standard, now that there's been, whether you want to call them mandates or nudges, take your pick, to start having these endpoints stood up at payers, providers, and even in some cases for patients to access, right, via apps. Once those start becoming more normalized within the ecosystem, I believe that's going to be a signal for, and if you're not already there yet, you're going to have to get your internal operations as a CIO thinking more about how you're going to consume that data. Because a lot of plans, and I'm really speaking from a plan perspective as a CIO, if you will, because that's where a lot of this ends up, if you will, from a reporting perspective. Yes, it's true that the providers are having a report. That's absolutely correct. And they're usually doing that via their EHR. Now, there's some other modalities that they're allowing, CMS are allowing for reporting right now that are more manual based or what have you. But I believe they're going to move, and they're putting signals out that it's going to come straight out of your electronic health record, right? So what you're going to start seeing is the move to make the measures more machine readable, more machine executable, back to your point about automation, more hookable. When I say hookable, where other apps like clinical decision support can hook into the measure, because really what the goal of measurement isn't to get a performance rate, and that's not the intended reason. It's really to help the clinicians with decision making at the point of care, right? And so clinical decision support can be benefited in this way with this new digital ecosystem, by which the measurement ecosystem will then derive what a clinician should be thinking about in the course of care, so that they're correcting, I'm going to say correcting, that's not the right word, so that they're providing the right levels of services at the point of care. And so the measure itself will be automated, if you will, and helping out the clinical decision support. So what you're going to start seeing is some of that automation is going to help at the local point of care, where they're going to build dashboards, to your point, where they're going to see real-time quality, not retrospective quality. Right now, HEDIS is a retrospective quality. We're trying to get prospective quality into the play, right? So that it is helping at the point of care. So that's where I believe a CIO should be looking, if I'm a plan, should be looking for the ecosystem, leveraging those endpoints where they're starting to see them stand up. You know, there's always going to be what I call the early adopters. And I would encourage health plans to start thinking about parts of their network where they're seeing early adoption, work with those early adopters, and start building out prototypes and proof of concepts around these I'm going to call them digital ways of getting their data and their reports. It's not going to happen all at once, but you're going to have to start using an evolutionary model to pick out market spots where you see the inflection point and the critical mass starting to occur so you can actually start doing these digital reporting concepts. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. And I like how you mentioned the shift from retrospective quality to prospective and making an active impact on care. As you were speaking, I was thinking that many of our listeners being in provider settings often are very focused on their own process-driven metrics. Maybe there are a few outcomes-driven metrics as well, but they're very focused on the delivery of care and enabling those clinicians. I think less in the forefront of their mind is what health plans are thinking of and doing with their data. I think generally provider organizations providers in an organization and administrators may not be interacting on a daily basis with health plans. So since you have insight into what their perspective might be, I'd like to ask, you know, what do health plans wish providers would do better? What do they see with these measures? And they say, you know, I just wish I can get that health system CIO to do X. What would that be and how would they go about doing it?
Oh, wow. Man, you're going to get me in trouble with that question. Not having been directly involved in a health plan operation, which I've only been on the peripheral right at NCQA, and I've worked with a couple of organizations since my post-NCQA time, I think that a lot of the old ways of, you know, this sort of, I'm going to call it the us-them sort of mentality around, you know, it's the plan's fault, it's the insurers keeping me from, like, say, prior authorization, right? That's a big pain in the bottom for everybody, right? It creates a burden. It creates, stagnates the system. So there's another opportunity for some digital automation, right? That's going to, hopefully weed some of that burden out. I think really it comes down to sort of this culture between it's an us, them. So if you get out of the us, them, and it's a we or an us, I do think that that kind of an arrangement is going to be more supportive of this shift. Right now, if you continue to think it's an us or we, they, and, well, it's our data. No, that's our data. That's your data. That's got to stop. And I believe the signals are out right now about that. You know, no more information blocking, right? No more exorbitant fees to get access to data. You know, these kinds of things are being teed up. And if you're not reading those tea leaves, you're probably going to not do well in the future ecosystem. So if I were a plan, I think I'd be nudging my network of providers that I'm working with to be more open to the concept of sharing the data both ways, right, in a bilateral way, so that you both benefit in the risk and the sharing of improving quality for the populations that you're both responsible for. That's where I believe it's headed. And I think the ecosystem is going to make that a lot more possible. Whereas before it was data siloed, those barriers are going to come down. They're slowly melting away, not as quick as we'd like, but they're slowly melting in a way. And I believe what the message would be from a plan to a provider and probably back is, let's stop the nonsense. Let's start working together more fluidly.
And you're talking about the shift from us versus them regarding plans versus providers to more of an us or a we. And it calls to mind a general market trend of a shift to value-based care, to merging payers and providers together. You have on the extreme end of the spectrum, the Kaiser Permanente's, the Intermountains, the UPMCs are a little bit more further away from Kaiser, but much further, more integrated than the fee-for-service model. And then you have ACOs somewhere in the middle. How are plans reacting to this shift to value-based care in the provider environment? Is it threatening to plans? Do they see it as competition? How should providers kind of think about plans as they're moving to more value-based care?
Wow. Yeah, I think there's all different sorts of models emerging, right? There's payviders, like you said, the ACO model is another good example. There are many different, I think, thousand blooms or thousand points of light sort of models emerging. Which will win out? I mean, there's some that say value-based care has been going on for 10, 15 years now, depending upon when you want to put the clock start on that, right? And there's all, you know, obviously interoperability is another one. Like, we've been working on this interoperability thing, and I've been in healthcare since 1995, so we're going on 30 years now, and we're still not there. As the old saying goes, we've come a long way, but we still have a long way to go. Are we at the midpoint? Now, I wouldn't say we're at the midpoint. I'd say we're past the midpoint on some of these things. But ultimately, what's going to drive this, it's going to have to be quite candidly, the financial incentive model. I mean, that's what's driving sort of this lunacy within our healthcare ecosystem, right? Who's going to be the winners? Who's going to be the losers? In terms of, we know there's waste in the ecosystem, right? So, and some parts of the ecosystem are benefiting from that waste, right? Because those are someone's waste is someone else's treasure, if you will, right? One man's trash, another man's treasure. So there are tightly held, whatever you want to call them, beliefs or sacred cows, if you will, that will be held on to. And those will be the ones that I think are going to have the hardest time with this. And the more you hold on to those sacred cows of, you know, the mid-90s to the, you know, mid-2000s, and you're not waking up to this new phenomenon of having to build out these relationships in a way that benefit both of you mutually. It's not a winner or loser. You got to figure out a way for winners to both continue. And I think the value-based care is that opportunity, or, you know, it's a way for gain sharing to occur. And I think to your point, it's showing up in things like the contract in terms of who's getting incentivized for what and for what pieces, right? So if I, as a plan, reduce hospitalizations with the network of my provider, right? Well, should they not share in that right return and that efficiency gain? I think those are the kinds of relationships that I'm starting to see happen more frequently. I'm involved in some other activities around this in terms of companies that are supporting what I'm going to call the care extender model, where they're getting in between the, let's say, primary care, referral care, and the plan, and helping coordinate those kinds of infrastructural issues that, let's say, a primary care practice never was built to do. And so you're starting to see these other entities, intermediaries, what have you, emerge to help support that part of the ecosystem to build a bridge between, let's say, care coordination with those community-based organizations that were kind of off on their own, that didn't get leveraged as well, the social determinants of health. And I believe plans, those sort of community providers and social determinants of health and health equity have, as we know, in the last 2 years, gotten a lot more attention because of what went on with COVID. And I think those are very strong indicators for where the ecosystem needs to move, right? And we're going to break down these barriers and, well, no, that's not a medical issue. It's related to medical issues, but they're not paid for, right? They've got different rule sets around how we can use money to pay for those kinds of events. Those things are starting to melt away as well. And when you start looking at healthcare more community-based like that, then I believe you can start building winners and everybody gains in that. Right now, staying in a fee-for-service model is holding us back.
So, Rick, we're approaching the end of this podcast episode, but there is an elephant in the room. There are many more topics, but there's one last remaining topic I'd like to address in this call.
Sure.
You're talking about merging of organizations. You're talking about reducing barriers between payers and providers. You're talking about the automation of reporting of HEDIS quality measures. And as you remove these barriers, it begs the question, what about privacy and security? What sort of concerns should a CIO have as we will reduce these barriers, that the information, which is PHI, is being limited to good actors, and that bad actors are being kept out, and even good actors who shouldn't have access to the data are not accidentally given an access? How should CIOs approach these new headwinds with regards to privacy and security?
Wow, you've got some great questions, Jordan. I could probably spend a day or, you know, hours on either one of these, but, you know, I'm a privacy and security guy myself, so I'm a certified information security manager and all that good stuff. So I know all the protocols that we should be doing, and quite candidly, there's probably more than we'd care to cover, but ultimately, it does come down to a culture shift in the U.S. healthcare system around how we as patients and how we as consumers of healthcare think about our privacy and security in this regard, right? So let's just talk about the elephant in the room, to your point. We need a national patient identifier in this country. It is holding us back in many, many, many ways and creating unintended consequences, as far as I'm concerned, from Rick's perspective around, for example, for me to find a patient in another ecosystem, I have to give them 5 to 10 different data elements that are covered under PHI, you know, whether it's name, address, driver's license, whatever you might, you know, whatever. So we're passing around all these elements of PHI that are probably more revealing than just a single number that we've got encrypted somewhere that's a national registry that only, you know, and I think that's where it's a little scary for people. It's like, well, wait a minute, do I want the national government having that? Well, we have something like that now called the Social Security number, right? So at the end of the day, and we have got to get more comfortable as a society around this notion that not having, or that by not having a national patient identifier, that we're somehow better off. And my thing is, I think we're worse off, and we've created more holes in our privacy and security by requiring us to do patient matching, because we're having to pull all these other databases together and link them up so that we can make sure that you're really Jordan Cooper, you know, and you're not another Jordan Cooper from another part of the country or what have you. And that's happening more often than not, because we're having, and that's increasing error into our healthcare record systems, because we're linking you up. And I can't tell you the actual statistics, but I've heard it could be as high as a 20% variation in the accuracy of some of those algorithms, right? Depending upon what segment of the population you're talking about. So it's more nuanced than just, well, if we added blockchain, for example, that's going to solve everything. No, I'm not a believer of that either. I believe we have to start at the culture level, and that starts with policy. That starts with getting government to understand that this is needed, and that would reduce a lot of these things. So one of the things I learned a long time ago as an operations manager, never perfect that which should never be done. I think that's a Deming motto. And we're perfecting that which should never be done. We shouldn't have to do patient matching like this. It's creating unintended consequences. We have national facility IDs. We have national provider IDs. Now we're missing who's getting the care. So if you know where the care is given, who's giving it to you, and who it's given on, those are three of the basic elements that you need to do what? Watch someone go through the ecosystem. And when you start having those kinds of abilities to find the data and match the data, you get into a much more robust way to do this digital automation and actually get to a learning health system, because we can then start using real analytics. And oh, by the way, we're not going to get into AI yet, but artificial intelligence is going to be doing a lot of this for us as well. So great questions. Thanks for having me. I enjoyed every one of them.
Thank you. And for our listeners who joined us in the middle, this has been Rick Moore, founder and CEO of MTC Group, former CIO of NCQA, and a retired Air Force major. Rick, thanks so much for joining us today.
From InterSystems, this has been the Healthy Data Podcast. I'm Jordan Cooper. Thank you for listening.